2 weeks out of three either. I noticed there's more people here than the last time I spoke. I guess quite a few of you felt you couldn't be coming back that soon, so you showed up anyway. No, I just a couple of quick comments on Dr. Gardenhire's message. First, I think it is truly amazing that at his age he made it up these steps. No, I'm kidding. Bob's a good friend. But seriously, it was a good message. I what I really appreciate, if I may say so, it's not common we comment on one another's messages, but I love it when someone says, we don't know, especially when we're talking about something that happened 4,000 to 5,000 years ago. It might be prudent to say that, no? So that was very, very well done. We are going to have a game of dice after church, for those of you that are interested. Bob brought his. You know what I always ask? Where is he? Oh, what are the lots? I'd like somebody to explain to me what the lots are, or the Urim and Thummim, or the Thummim and whatever. You know, every time I come to San Diego, it's always interesting. I hope I pronounce his last name, Mr. Koike. Mr. Koike's shirt, and I'm looking at that beautiful Hawaiian print of a shirt he has on. I don't mean to embarrass him, and I'm thinking, I'm in San Diego church again. And I always think, I'm just going to show up without a tie sometime with one of these beautiful shirts that you guys... We couldn't get away with that in L.A., yeah? In fact, we turn people away that don't have a tie on. The women get really upset. There are many stories that we read to our children from the Bible. And all of us, more times than not, are in this room, did grow up being read to or going to maybe a Sunday school in our old days. Or we heard, maybe on radio or TV, a Bible story. We know about Noah and the Ark. We know about David and Goliath. We know about the beginning in Genesis. But many times, the stories are very short. They're fairly historical, and they're really just a capsule of what really happened. There is some detail with some of the stories, but rarely is there much given. We move from Genesis to Deuteronomy, and the stories are very short. They're very clipped. I mean, it takes just two or three chapters, and God creates the entire face of the earth. It's very short. There's not much interchange. But by the time we get to the historical books, especially in 1 and 2 Samuel, they now begin to fuse a little bit more history with people. Now, 1 and 2 Samuel, what's interesting about 1 and 2 Samuel, as you know, it's possibly you know this in the Hebrew Bible, it's one book. They fuse a lot of these books together. In our Bible, 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 Samuel is about quite a bit about who? Samuel, right? When we get to 2 Samuel... Is Samuel in 2 Samuel? Not much. He's dead. But we still call it 2 Samuel. So they're named, and we have to dig into them with the detailed storytelling of just exactly what is happening. Many times there's lots of facts, but there's not much about the people. There's not much about their emotions. And sometimes, buried deep in these stories, there's a wonderful lesson. What I'd like to talk with you today about, as opposed to last time I was here in Mr. Miller and I had picked out some of the same verses. Mr. Gardenhire and I, our messages have absolutely nothing to do with each other. They are very different. So I'd like to discuss with you today a beautiful story. It has some literature in it. It has some literary motifs. It has some key wording. Buried deep inside of it has a very, I think, good lesson that I'll hope to share with you. It has a hero or a heroine and a villain. And you can hiss at the appropriate time. But it is a beautiful story, and I think it is a good story, whereas it's not attuned too much to the Holy Day season, I think it's possible we can glean from it an attitude to approach the Holy Day season with. So if you turn with me now to 1 Samuel chapter 25. Now, one of the reasons I asked you about 2 Samuel is, you know, 2 Samuel devoted to Samuel. It's not about Samuel at all, because in chapter 25, verse 1, we read, then Samuel died. So he's not going to have a big part to play in 2 Samuel. Samuel died, and the Israelites gathered together and lamented for him and buried him at his home in Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran. The wilderness of Paran is basically a desert. And I thought, again, not to keep referencing Dr. Gardenhire, but you're going to hear I think it's so important, and I was so glad he brought this up. Look at the adverbs. Look at the adjectives. When you go down to the desert, when you go up to Jerusalem, it's there for a reason. It's trying to, and the Bible doesn't always paint a brilliant landscape, but it does give you key words. The Paran, the wilderness of Paran, is the desert. And you go down to the desert, don't you? In fact, in California, we have something very odd out here. We have the low desert, where it gets very, very hot. And then we have the what? High desert. People from the East Coast come out here, and they're utterly confused. We were in the low desert last week, and it got up to about 114 degrees. Yeah. It's pretty low, except the temperature. So David is now in the wilderness in the desert. Verse 2. Now there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel. Now the Carmel that we always think of is in Carmel up by Monterey. And Carmel means beautiful vineyard or beautiful area, just like it does in California. Carmel is a beautiful, beautiful place. How many of you have ever been to Carmel? Yeah, California. Yeah, Carmel, California. Not Carmel, yeah, Indiana. But there's only one Carmel. Carmel, California, it is indeed a beautiful place, but it's probably a little different than the Carmel here. But this was a very, very beautiful place. And the man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats. That's a lot. He was very wealthy. And he was shearing his sheep, or was having his sheep sheared by others, in Carmel. The name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding. She was wise, and she was beautiful. So not only was she intelligent, she had wisdom, she was also beautiful. But the man was harsh and evil in his doings. He was the house of Caleb. He was a Calebite. So we already have the stage set with two of our main characters in this story. We have Nabal. Nabal, who was... There we go. Very good. I wondered if anybody would remember. We have Nabal and we have Abigail. What do we do for Abigail if we hiss for Nabal? Ooh, ah. You don't have to keep this up. Is this being taped? I'll get a letter from Mr. Weber. Hi, John. Thanks for coming out to San Diego, but the sound effects you evoked were not necessary. But you get the point. So here we have good with Abigail and we have evil. And they use those terms. If we have good and evil, we therefore have wise and... Yeah, some of you are using the nice biblical word of wise, but we know it means stupid, right? So we have wise and stupid, and we have good and evil. And he was evil in his doings. Verse 4, it says, when David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep, David sent 10 young men. Well, remember the numbers here. The numbers are critical. 10 young men, and David said to the young men, go up to Carmel. He's in the desert. He's going up to Carmel. Also, what's interesting is the words young men. Now, if you have a New King James, they are very consistent in the translation. It is the word we would call the lads. It's a term of almost affection. So he calls them, he sent 10 of his young men, and David said to the young men, go up to Carmel, go to Nabal, and greet him in my name, in the name of David. And go to Nabal and say, you shall say thus to him, who lives in prosperity, peace to you, peace to your house, and peace to all that you have. Right? In the original, it would say, shalom, shalom, shalom. Peace, peace, peace. Says it 3 times. Peace to all you have. Peace to you. Peace to your household, peace to everything that you have, which is a lot. He has a lot. He says, now I have heard that you have shearers. Your shepherds were with us, in other words, David's young men, and we did not hurt them, nor was there anything missing from all the while that they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, your lads, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your eyes, for we come on a feast day, a holiday. We don't know that it was really a a biblical high day. It could have been, but there's nothing referenced. We come on a high day. Please give whatever comes to your hand to your servants, it means servants, and to your son, David. Isn't that nice? We took care of you all this time, all your people while they were tending sheep. Ask them, they'll tell you. We didn't take anything from them. We protected them all this time for months and months and months. Now, if you would, if you could, please, whatever you'd like to give us would be great. Remember that David is really on the run, isn't he? He's running from Saul. Saul's after his life. He's got men that have come to be with David, but he's still somewhat of a fugitive. He's living in the desert, and he's living off the land as best as he can. And so he's provided some protection. He would, if it were in Nabal's power, to be given some reward for that. In Chicago, they call it a protection racket. In here, it's just called protection. But I don't think they really expected anything. They probably just wanted to get anything that they could to survive on. Verse 9, so when David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all these words in the name of David, and they waited. They said their piece, then they stopped. Then Nabal answered and said, sure, I've talked to my men. You did protect them. Thank you. No, no, no. Nabal, as we'll see, is aptly named, and he answered, David's servants and said, who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? Well, obviously, knew who David was, because he never mentioned he was the son of Jesse. By the way, he's not my son. He's the son of Jesse, whoever that is. There are many servants nowadays who break away each one from his master. Shall I, now listen to the personal pronouns, shall I take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men, the common word for man, when I do not know where they are from? This is just exactly the opposite of what David's men were expecting. Now, one of the things the Bible doesn't tell us, but you can see this is a very close word-for-word exchange. This is a conversation. And 1 Samuel 25 is one of the few that gives us almost a blow-by-blow description, almost literally. Can you imagine the faces of David's men? They stood there, they're waiting. They may have their head bowed a little bit. Oh, good sir. Oh, kind sir. Whatever you might find in your hand. Whatever you might find in your hand. And they hear this. Can you imagine what their reaction was? Can you imagine what they would have thought? What? What? So David's young men turned on their heels and went back. In fact, the verse there, the turned on their heels and went back, literally is a term they use for military, where they spun on their heels, turned right around, about face, and they left. They came and told all these words. Verse 13, David said, possibly Nabal misunderstood you. You weren't very clear. I'm sure that that's not what he said. Why don't you go and try and speak to him again? No. David heard what the young men said. They told him all these words. Then David said to his men, verse 13, every man gird on his sword. So every man girded on his sword. And David girded on his sword. And about 400 men went with David. 200 stayed with the supplies. 400 men girded on their swords. Notice, very interestingly, from a literary standpoint, David said, go to Nabal and say, peace, peace, peace. Now David is saying, sword, 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 three times. Peace and sword. Where do you remember hearing that? I came not to bring peace, but a sword. The literature of the Bible is really incredible, and they use what is done in the past many times for the future. Peace, three times, sword, three times. Jesus said, I come not to bring peace, but a sword. So they gird on their swords, 400 men. Verse 14, now one of the young men, interesting the word is young men, lads, of Nabal's told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, "Look, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he reviled them." Right? What Nabal said to David's men was meant to injure and demean. Right? He attacked his heritage. He attacked his request. He rebuffed him completely in every way, shape, and form. They greet our master. He reviled them. Verse 15. "But the men were very good to us, David's men, and we were not hurt, nor did we miss anything as long as we accompanied them when we were in the fields. They were a wall to us both by day and by night, all the time we were with them, keeping the sheep." Everything that David said that his men had done was true. They protected us. Now he's gone to Abigail. Here we have what's known as a very, very wise servant. This is the pivot verse of the whole chapter, right here. As we shall see, if this man had not gone to Abigail and started the series of events that occur, it would have been a horrible, horrible change of events. So there's this issue of honor, of tradition, which is going to end in death. He says, verse 17, "Now therefore," he says to Abigail, "know and consider, ponder what you will do, for harm is determined against our master and against all his household. For he is such a scoundrel." The original says, "son of Belial." We have a similar associated term today that we will not mention, right? Yeah? A worthless fellow, a son of Belial. I mean, I looked this up and they said this was not nice language among common people. This guy, and he's saying this is the servant speaking to Abigail, the boss's wife, right? He obviously would not say this directly to Nabal, and we'll find out why. "You can't talk to him. No one can speak to him." Verse 18 is where Abigail goes into action. She moves quickly. "Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep already dressed, 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 clusters of raisins, 200 cakes of figs." I'm hungry just reading it. "And loaded them onto donkeys. And she said to her servants," very interesting, "go on before me. See, I am coming after you." But she didn't tell her husband, Nabal. Now, in your side margins by now, you've already referenced the word Nabal. Nabal means, louder? Fool, right? So if Nabal is fool, what's Abigail's last name? "Hello, I'd like to introduce you to Mrs. Stupid." Right? You know, you always have to wonder when you look at this, and by now I want to stop and take a quick pause for a little bit of a segue. We have to think at this point, this woman is indeed, we don't know how beautiful she was, we don't have any pictures, but it sure looks like already we see how very intelligent she is. She knows what to do. So the question arises, how in the world did Abigail get hooked up with this guy? Yeah? Yeah? Think about that. Think about that. She must have been very beautiful and not that bright. Right? Can you imagine the church dance? Right? I'm kidding, but the church dance where, "Hello, Abigail, I'd like you to meet my friend, Mr. Stupid." Right? And then he says, "Would you like to dance?" Well, if Abigail was bright and beautiful, what do you think she'd say? But there's probably a good reason why they got together. So I want that mulling over in your head. But all of this texture and literary background is buried in this chapter. So she sends out this incredible amount of food, lays it on donkeys. What's interesting is this is exactly what David had asked for to begin with. Right? This is exactly what he had asked for. Right? And Abigail's the one that figures this out like this. Right? Gets it all prepared. Or had it, took what was prepared and sent it out. What's interesting about this is that indeed once some of Nabal's words come back, it says, verse 11, go back to verse 11, it says, "Shall I take my bread and my water?" What was the first thing? Food and drink that she supplied. Food, water, food and drink. Food, drink, and meat that I have killed for my shears and give it to these people that just showed up? Well, that's exactly what Abigail does. Exactly what she does. What is also interesting is she sends the food and the donkeys out first or last? First. First. That she will follow later. It's very, very sly. And you have to read this. The word order and the order of events are critical. So, verse 20. If I can read it. I don't know what it is about me coming down to San Diego. I always wind up bringing the wrong glasses. The bad part is these aren't my wife's this time. These are mine. So, does it say so it was? Yeah. So it was? Somebody just want to read it for me? I'm kidding. I can see it. So it was, verse 20, as she rode on the donkey that she went down under cover of the hill. Remember, if they're in Carmel and she's meeting David, she is at a higher elevation. I guess the messages did connect that way, right? You had commonality of elevation. So she's in Carmel. He's in the desert. And so she's riding down. He's coming up to do battle. By the way, it's not a strong position militarily to be coming up on your enemy unless you know they don't know you're coming. So he says, David and his men coming down toward her, and she met them. Now, what has happened here is all this food on all these donkeys, as Abigail has sent them before her, David is coming along with his men. I don't know how many are on foot and how many were not on foot. But 400 men are coming up the hill. Here comes the food down the hill. Yeah? Right? I don't want to read into what the Bible is saying, but that's exactly what's happening. The food's coming down, and David and his men, what is this? What is this? All this food, all this meat and drink. What is all this food? And then comes Abigail. Now, David, verse 20, we read that David and his men coming down toward her, and she met them. So here is this woman who shows up at the end of this caravan. David is probably utterly what? Confused. Utterly confused. He doesn't know who Abigail is. Now, David had said, surely, in vain I have protected all that this fellow has in the wilderness. I protected everything he has, so that nothing was missed of all that belongs to him, and he has repaid me evil for good. Right? Well, we know what the Bible says when somebody repays you evil for good. You're to give them evil back. Right? Recompense the slight. Isn't that? That's not what it says. It gets worse with David. He does something, he does a very rash act in verse 22. And I'm not here to beat up on David, but we are here to read this and use the words that are written for us. In verse 22, he says, "May God do so and more also to the enemies of David if I leave one male of all who belongs to him by morning light." How many is he going to kill? Everybody. Why? Why? Because he didn't get the food he wanted? Oh, no. No, his name slandered. Yeah? We're going to kill hundreds of people because he attacked me verbally. This is not one of David's more glistening high points, is it? Whereas we can agree that this was a man after God's own heart, this is not one of those examples. This is one of those examples where I'm going to eradicate a man and everyone, every male that works for him. Do you know how bad that is? Can you imagine going into a society of this era and to kill all the men? Right? What would that leave to the women and children? No protection, nothing. Nothing. He says, may God do so. What do we call that? May God. What is that called? It's an oath or a vow. May God do so more also to the enemies of David if I leave one male of all who belong to him by morning light. I want you to remember that with what happened and where this oath goes. So verse 22, now when Abigail saw David, it was kind of an interlude there with David reminiscing in his head. It gives us almost an integral idea of what David is thinking. He's riding on he's walking. He's going up the hill and he's thinking, you know what? I did everything right. I tried to to ask this guy a little bit, and this is the way he repays me, I'm going to kill them all. What's all this? Food. All this food is coming at him. And then there's this woman at the very end, right? So verse 23. Now when Abigail saw David, she dismounted quickly from the donkey, fell on her face before David, and bowed down to the ground. So she fell at his feet and said, "On me, my Lord, on me let this iniquity be. And please let your maidservant speak in your ears and hear the words of your maidservant." Do you see the complete and utter change in words and posture and attitude? Here we have David and Nabal. Eisegesis is where we read into it. Exegesis is where we read out of it. I'm not going to practice eisegesis and read into the words here. But I'm going to give you a little bit of what's going through my head. Abigail, David, and Nabal. Nabal and David. What's the difference? My opinion, not a whole lot at this point. Not a whole lot. It's one thing to call somebody names. It's another thing to say, "I'm going to kill everybody." I'm not sure who's the fool here. And I think the Bible in this chapter sets us up to try and understand what's going on here, right? And we're going to see who emerges as the intelligent or wise one. She has fallen at his feet. He calls herself maidservant in your ears, and hear the words of your maidservant. Verse 25, "Please let not my Lord regard this scoundrel Nabal, for his name is," so he is, Nabal is his name. I mean, what are you going to do, right? Right? Is she really showing disrespect for her husband? It's a very interesting story. If your husband's name was Idiot, it could be really hard to not let other people know that, right? Yeah. Nabal is his name. She's trying to diffuse the situation. You know, what am I supposed to do? Right? "Please let not my Lord regard this scoundrel, for his name is Nabal is his name. Folly is with him. Folly is with him. But I, your maidservant," notice how she turns the whole issue around. "I, your maidservant, did not see the young men. And my Lord, whom you sent, I didn't see you or the young men. Now, therefore, my Lord, as the Eternal lives and as your soul lives, since the Eternal has held you back from coming to bloodshed," held you back? It's a little presumptive. "Has from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek harm from my Lord be as Nabal." Be as fools, foolish people. "And now this present, which your maidservant has brought to my Lord, let it be given to the young men." That same word of affection to the lads who follow my Lord. "Please forgive the trespass of this moron I'm married to." It's not what she says. It's very interesting what she says. "Please forgive the trespass of your maidservant." She's now done it twice. What did she do? What did she do? There's almost a guilt that you can ascribe to her, and I'm no psychologist. You know, I'm married to this guy. I can't leave him alone with anybody because I know he's going to cause trouble. I wonder if there's part of it. And probably this is not the first time this has happened. He didn't become Nabal just before this incident. It's been like this for a long, long time. "For the Lord, the Eternal will certainly make my Lord, David, an enduring house, because my Lord fights the battles of the Eternal, and evil is not found in you throughout your days. Yet a man has risen to pursue you and seek your life, but the life of my Lord," speaking to David, "shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Eternal your God, and the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from a pocket of a sling." What's that a good reference to? Yeah, the sling with Goliath. They all know who David is. She is showing him tremendous respect, where Nabal showed him utter disrespect. The words are chosen so carefully. They are so beautiful. They are so humble, so very humble. Verse 30, "It shall come to pass when the Lord has done for my Lord, when the Eternal has done for my Lord, David, according to all the good that God has spoken concerning you and has appointed you ruler over Israel, that this will be no grief to you, nor offense of heart to my Lord, either that you have shed blood without cause," hint, hint, without cause, or that my Lord has avenged himself. But when the Eternal has dealt well with my Lord, then remember me. Remember me. She's trying to put it all in perspective. This is a small thing to you. Don't let your reign, when you do become leader and ruler in Israel, be put to your shame. Because this is without reason. This is without cause, what you are doing. Please accept this present. And when you come, please remember your maidservant. Verse 32, can you now imagine David's bottom draw is probably hitting the ground? If he was on a donkey, it would have been that long. What? He has got, just picture what this one woman is standing in front of, or excuse me, kneeling in front of. 400 armed men. How many of you ladies would like to face that? I know you've been on the I-15 or the I-10. I'm not talking about that. How many of you would like to stand in front of 400 men ready for bloodshed? They are ready to kill. No hesitation. They've been in the desert. They've been hounded by the king's army for weeks or months. We don't know. Years. It didn't take much to snap David. David makes one command. They gird on their swords and they're going up the hill. And here's this one woman. One woman facing them. Pretty tough stuff. Verse 32, David is probably in utter shock. Then David said to Abigail, "Blessed is the Eternal God of Israel, who sent you this day to meet me. And blessed is your advice, and blessed are you." Three times. "Blessed, blessed, blessed. Because you have kept me this day from coming to bloodshed and from avenging myself with my own hand. For indeed, as the Eternal God of Israel lives, who has kept me back from hurting you, unless you had hurried and come to meet me," in other words, done it with haste, "surely by morning light no males would have been left to Nabal." Who does he admit it would hurt? Nabal and his men would be dead, but it would have hurt Abigail. And now he knows, David understands, who it would have hurt. Who it would have damaged. It would have damaged her. "He's held me back or kept me back from hurting you, for no one would have been left to Nabal's household that was a male." Verse 35, "So David received," that's all he says, he's done. "So David received from her hand what she had brought him and said to her, 'Go up in peace to your house. See, I have heeded your voice and respected your person.' Now Abigail went to Nabal, and there he was holding a feast in his house, like the feast of a king." The feast, like, it says, the feast of a king. Some of the commentaries, and there is a tremendous amount of literature on this one single chapter. One individual wrote a 200-page book that I was able to obtain on this one chapter of all the different motifs that Nabal possibly was the king of Carmel. Was the king of Carmel. And this was a tremendous rivalry of king to king. He knew exactly who David was. He knew who Saul was. So he's drinking like a king. Like the feast of a king. "And Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. And therefore she told him nothing, little or much, until morning light." So it was in the morning when he should have been what? Dead. When he should have been dead, when the wine had gone from Nabal, I guess it means he sobers up. That's got various interpretations. "His wife told him these things, and his heart died." I don't know whether it died over he felt his wife had betrayed him, he didn't understand that it took his wife to save him, or that she had given away some of his stuff. Hard to say. "His heart died within him and became like a stone." Did he have a heart attack, a heart seizure? Who knows? "And then it happened after about 10 days that the Eternal struck Nabal and he died." He finally died. For 10 days he lingered. "So when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, 'Blessed be the Eternal who has pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal.'" The Eternal has done this and has kept his servant from evil. "For the Eternal has returned the wickedness of Nabal on his own head. And David sent and proposed to Abigail to take her as his wife." What's interesting is that when you come into your rulership, he didn't say maybe not just the king of Israel, but a king had died, Nabal. Right? She was now without a king. David sent and proposed to Abigail then, not when he became a king of Israel, to take her as his wife. When the servants of David had come to Abigail at Carmel, they spoke to her saying, David sent us to you to ask you to become his wife. First of all, can you imagine Nabal asking anything? Right? He was usually a teller. Right? He told people what to do more than likely. David sends emissaries to ask you to become his wife. Verse 41, then she arose, bowed her face to the earth and said, here is your maidservant, a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my Lord. Not David, to wash his servants' feet. So Abigail rose in haste. Seems this woman does everything quickly. Yeah? She rises in haste, she moves in haste, but she likes to ride on donkeys. And she rode on a donkey attended by five of her maidens. Remember the emissaries that David sent? How many were there? 10. 10, which is, by the way, pretty close to a Jewish quorum. Abigail has five attendants. And she followed the messengers of David and became his wife. It's a great story. I hope you enjoyed it. But deep inside these stories, which I know you've read many, many times, the story of David and Abigail, I'd like us to think that it teaches us three things, possibly more. There are so many side scriptures that we can cite on this. For it is the who. Who is it who says in his heart there is no God? The fool. The Nabal says in his heart there is no God. It is he who eats, drinks, and be merry because they don't care. We can learn a lot of these things. But let's look at three that I pulled out. Number one, this is so difficult in this 21st century, especially in Southern California, to acknowledge that God's in charge. God is in utter control. Something we heard in the first message. God's in control. We can do whatever we'd like, think whatever we'd like, but at the end of the day, God's in charge. And sometimes it's better to do very little in a situation where we know it's hopeless. When it's deemed hopeless, that really is the time to stop trying to make it unhopeless. Only God can do that. David finally acknowledged God's sovereignty. David at every point wanted to take things into his own hand. There was nothing wrong in asking for what he did for the food. It was wrong, I hope you would agree, of his reaction to it. There's nothing biblical about that. Because your name is slandered, you kill everyone that draws breath. If somebody can reference that for me, I'd like to see it in the Old or New Testament. It also teaches us, I think, to be slow to anger. Be slow to anger. There were a lot of hotheads in this story. The men. Nabal was quick to answer. David was quick to respond and to kill and not in kind. So gentleness coupled with wisdom is a key when we are slow to anger. But it also maybe tells us, and there's a very good example here buried in all this, of where we can, where it is possible to do good, to try and do good. Abigail can be seen as a peacemaker, but she is one of those biblical figures that so often is overlooked. The rabbi said that of the women of the Old Testament, of the seven prime women, Abigail is one in whom the Holy Spirit resides. I would agree. We know that David had God's Spirit. I'm not sure this was the best example of it. But Abigail, if David did, Abigail surely. She is an example of selflessness. It's almost Christ-like in her humility. She's constantly either on a donkey, which is a symbol of humility, as we know, or on her knees throughout this whole chapter. And the words that she uses, half the time she has her face buried toward the ground, she's talking in humble terms. She is that kind of example. She's also, to a degree, an example to people. It's not so much an example to the wives, gentlemen, because the bad guy here is not really David. The true villain here is Nabal. And many of us are married to Abigails, which makes us what? Often, yeah, lucky, blessed, well spoken. Often I'm sometimes a Nabal. Sometimes a big Nabal. A dumb Nabal. And all of us are many times. I think we should possibly treat our wives as Abigails. This beautiful story is buried deep, deep, deep in 1 Samuel 25. I would ask you to possibly read it again, because there's much, much more than we touched on here. There are more parallels. Look up some of the words. The words are very critical, and I don't have the time to go through all the plays on words. But it's one of servanthood and humility, which I think is a very important point as we do enter the fall holy days. That's one of the aspects that is so difficult in the lives, I think, that we all live, is humility. It's easily caught. It's not easily caught. It's even more hard to retain. So as we enter the holy day season, which I do wish you a very, and pray for a very good holy day season, I won't be seeing you in another 2 or 3 weeks. At least I don't think so. But I will probably see many of you at the feast, and we look forward to that day when we all meet in San Diego for the Feast of Tabernacles. Have a wonderful holy day season.